And good evening once again, everybody. Welcome to Hoops HD's Under the Radar podcast, your podcast is a source for every team that everybody else is not talking about other than upstairs Hoops HD Under the Radar. Right. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Joining us, first of all, David Griggs. David, how are you tonight?
I'm doing a little good. I am a little perturbed. We're going to get to this in a second, that, you know, the NCAA has ignored us. President Obama has ignored us. We're trying to get at the Lopes a waiver, and no one is responding to us. I mean, we've tweeted the president. We've had the petition. I'm a little perturbed, actually, Chad. I'm a little fed up because we're getting down to crunch time here.
We really are, David. We are 2 weeks away tonight from the start of the WAC tournament. Once the WAC tournament starts, that's it. The waiver will be gone because, but you know, until the WAC tournament actually starts, we can still get the WAC to change the rules and allow the Lopes in, NCAA to change the rules when the Lopes win that tournament, which they clearly would do, no doubt.
Right.
They should get the NCAA tournament bid. And, well, also joining us tonight is John Sleek. And, John, a little bit of news today that the Lopes actually announced that that if they do not get the waiver, they will be going to the CIT this year. But that's not what we're looking for, is it?
Yeah, that's probably the realistic expectation, considering the WAC isn't inviting them to the party. But here in MAC country, we're celebrating Mother Miami's win over Akron last night.
Mother Miami. Yeah, Akron did not have a good name. We're going to get to the Mid-American Conference in a bit here. But, David, like as you mentioned, the Lopes, we've been petitioning and going out there all season long trying to get them into the NCAA tournament, the Grand Canyon Antelopes. We started with our Twitter campaign, hashtag Lopes Waiver. We petitioned the president. He ignored us.
Yes.
You know, I think he's going to lose his job at the end of the year because of ignoring us.
He probably will.
Yeah. But there's something else that we did during the course of the year, David, and that was we told people to tweet at the NCAA and even call the NCAA.
Right. And the NCAA has not responded. They haven't even acknowledged. I mean, they're ignoring us.
They have not responded. But, Dave, what we decided we want to do tonight was people have been tweeting at the NCAA. People have been tweeting the hashtag Lopes Waiver. But I don't know that anybody's actually been calling the NCAA. So we wanted to show everybody exactly how that's done.
Yes.
Right here, live on the air, right now, we're going to call the NCAA and get this straightened out.
Yes.
I've got my phone right here. I've got their phone number. It's area code 317. This is right off of their website, 917-6222.
Yes.
And I'm going to give them a call right now. We're going to get this straight out. We are going to get the Lopes in the tournament right now.
Right now, on the show.
All right. I'm going to hold up here so we can hear it.
Thank you for calling the National Collegiate Athletic Association. Our office is now closed.
What?
Normal business hours are 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday.
I want to leave a message.
If you know your party's four-digit extension, you may enter it now or press 1 to request by name.
We need to request Mark Emmert.
All right, we're going to be pressing 1.
Who would you like to reach?
Mark Emmert.
Mark Emmert. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That's who we wanted to tell him. David Griggs is on the phone.
Mark Emmert.
We're calling Mark Emmert.
We are calling Mark Emmert.
It's ringing.
It's ringing.
You can hear this, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. We can hear it.
Hello. You have reached Lisa Curry. Please leave me your name and number, and I will return your call. Thank you. Record your message
at the tone.
When you are finished, hang up or press pound for more options.
Yeah, hi. This is Chad Sherwood from HoopsHD.com. I'm along with David Griggs and John Stalika. We were calling for Mark Emmert regarding the hashtag Lopes waiver movement. Apparently, the Grand Canyon Antelopes are still ineligible for the NCAA tournament. We need that changed. We are down to only 2 weeks left, a little over 2 weeks until the field is announced. So, Mr. Emmert, please give us a call back and make certain that the Lopes are admitted into the NCAA tournament this year as they deserve, as the best team in their conference.
You can tweet at us, too.
You can tweet at us, too, at hashtag Lopes Waiver or at Hoops HD. So please do so, or give us a call back. I will have my phone by us for the rest of the show. Thank you.
All right. Well, that
there you have it, folks. Mark Emmert now knows.
Yeah, well, that wasn't what we were hoping for, but I mean, at least we left him a message.
We did leave him a message. I was very nice this time. If we get to call again, we may not be as nice.
Right.
But I will have my phone by us for the rest of the show tonight. If he does call us back, I will let you know. And we'll get him right on the air.
Right. We're going to put him on the show when he calls.
But while we wait for Mark to call us back, or Lisa, or whoever that was that answered the phone.
Should we just wait, or do you want to get on with the show? I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming he's going to call right back.
Well, I assume he would, too, because he would be just checking, definitely checking his voicemails
all the time. Right, 10 o'clock, or what time is it up there? Yeah.
Probably 9 o'clock in Indianapolis. Or
okay, so definitely.
No, they're Eastern time.
Yep, they're on Eastern time.
Well, either way.
Anyhow, well, why don't we get into some of the under-the-radar teams while we wait for the call back? Every week we start by defining under-the-radar. David, do you want to tell us a little bit about what under-the-radar means?
Yes. Essentially, there are three qualifiers. I always forget the third one. But the first qualifier is that you can't be in a multi-bid conference. The multi-bid conferences, there's nine of them. It's the five power conferences or the five autonomy conferences, whatever you wanted to call them. That's the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Pac-12. And the four additional regular multi-bid leagues, which are the Big East, the A-10, the American, and holy crap, I'm forgetting. What's the other one?
The Mountain West.
Yeah, the Mountain West. Wow, yeah, I mean, I don't know why I kind of blanked on the Mountain West there. But anyway, any teams in those leagues are not really under the radar because those are regularly multi-bid leagues, although not so much the Mountain West this year. The other qualifier is that you cannot be ranked in either of the major top 25 polls. That's the coaches poll or the AP poll, because by definition, you are on the radar if you were ranked. And then the third disqualifier, and only two teams fall into this category, is that your national school's brand cannot be basically on the radar, which we feel BYU and Gonzaga are. And although Wichita State has not gotten there yet, they may after this year. So regardless of what kind of year they're having, BYU and Gonzaga are not under the radar.
Well, actually, a little bit of news. There's a little bit of rumors going around Wichita State that they may be trying to get out of the Missouri Valley Conference in the next couple of years here. Also talk about maybe even starting up a football program. And if those things happen, they may move into an on-the-radar program conference anyhow. So we'll see what happens there. Just some rumors swirling around the program.
Right. Real quick, and I mean real quick, because we got 23 conferences to get to. What do you think, because the American has Navy as a football affiliate, so there's 11 full members and then 12 football members, but Navy not a member of the conference. They don't have a vote. I don't exactly know how revenue sharing helps with them, but since they are a football affiliate, as is Hawaii in the Mountain West, wouldn't that open up a spot for sort of a full member without a football program, such as a VCU or a Wichita or someone very basketball-centric to strengthen the basketball side of things? I've always wondered that. I normally don't like the bloated conferences, but I think 12 teams can bring some division to it, some balance to it, maybe get, if you want to do divisions, you can do divisions. I just think 12 works a little better than 11, especially when you have 12 for football. What do you think?
I would agree with you on the fact that it works well. The reason why I don't think that would happen is that I don't know adding Wichita State as a basketball-only member to the American, for example, would give the American a chance to reopen its TV contract negotiations. And in other words, what ended up happening is the current TV money they have is going to have to get split one more way or one more partial way. Okay. I think when you add a new football member in, like, for example, the Big 12 is talking about expanding by two more teams at least. At least Oklahoma wants to expand by two more teams. That would reopen the negotiations with Fox and ESPN for their TV rights, give them a chance to increase the dollar amount, give them a chance to maybe add a Big 12 television network. I don't think adding Wichita State to the American does that, and that's why I don't think it will happen in and of itself.
Okay. Unless
somebody else, for example, if Cincinnati leaves the American to go to the Big 12, that may open the door for Wichita State to come in.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Anyhow, let's move on to the conferences, and we'd like to start with a highlighted conference, and I didn't tell either one of you that we're going to do this tonight, which top conference we're going to start with, but conference that we have not focused on yet, and actually, David, with Championship Week starting next week, this is actually going to be our final regular season Under the Radar video podcast tonight.
Yes, it is, and it's kind of sad. Yeah, God, it flies by, but... Yep. You know, the reason it's our last one is because we have the Championship Week video notebooks every night. That sort of takes the place of Under the Radar, especially in those early days when all of the conferences that are playing are Under the Radar conferences.
Yeah, so we'll definitely be talking about these conferences a ton during our video notebooks. We're just not going to be doing a Under the Radar specific podcast from here on out. One conference we've almost blown past every week this season, that I think we need to give a little love to here. A conference that's sending a team to Dayton almost no matter what, the Mideastern Athletic Conference, the MEAC.
Yeah.
We have not talked about them. We have not focused in on them. They've got a rather interesting thing going on when you look at their standings. You've got three teams at the top here, Hampton, South Carolina State, and Norfolk State, all within a game and a half or so of each other. And then you've got the bottom of the conference, where you have, I believe, eight teams all within a game of each other between 7th place and 13th place there.
Yeah.
Talk about parity reversed almost in this conference.
Yeah, and if you're looking at our screen, we have the standings up. These standings, of course, coming from our friend, colleague, coworker, well, sort of, Warren Nolan at warrennolan.com, our favorite statistical site. So that's where this is. Those are the images that you'll be seeing tonight and every other night as we go forward. So.
Especially if you go between 6th and 12th place right here, where you have NC Central at 6 and 7, and you've got three teams at 5 and 8 in Howard, North Carolina AT and Delaware State, and then another three teams at 5 and 9 in Eastern Shore, Coppin State, and also Morgan State.
Right. Florida A&M way down at the bottom at 4 and 9. They are actually ineligible due to APR, but this is also a conference where historically we have seen some crazy upsets in this conference tournament. And any of that group of teams that John just rattled off wouldn't completely blow us away if they stole the bid here.
No, it wouldn't. And it's been kind of frustrating. This is one of the leagues that will almost never get its team on or inside the bubble. So the only way in is the automatic bid. And I think it happened to Delaware State 2 or 3 years where they did not lose a single regular season game in a 2 or 3 year period, or maybe they only lost one, but they lost in the quarterfinals, every year in the conference tournament, and that was their only ticket in. So this is a conference that, I don't know, we complain about it when conferences don't do anything or don't do enough to help out their first place teams. Well, this is a conference that has suffered from that a lot, the Sun Belt being another one, but particularly this one. And some of those Delaware State teams, I don't know if they were good enough to win a game in the round of 64. I don't want to get carried away because you're still talking about the 14 line, the 15 line, but they were certainly better and more deserving than the team that ultimately went in with the automatic bid.
Yeah, I mean,
flip side of the coin is if you're a team like NC Central where you won the regular season tournament last year, you have a second chance this year to make a run in the conference tournament in Norfolk, where you'll be playing spoiler.
You can kind of say it's the reverse this year also. Hampton was the 7th seed last year's conference tournament, or 6th seed actually, stole the conference tournament title. Now they're going to probably be going in as the 1 seed, especially after Norfolk State lost tonight at Morgan State. And they're probably going to go in as the 1 seed, and they may... You know, they may have gotten their one appearance last year. I don't know if they're going to be able to repeat. And it's just been a crazy conference tournament almost every year. I think there's only been 1 year in the last 5 or 6 where the 1 seed actually won it.
Yeah, something else. And again, we haven't mentioned this. I don't know if we've ever mentioned this, but it is something that's painfully obvious. Ever since, even before the first four, ever since the I guess what was the play-in game, the opening round game, was put together in the 65-team format, they don't like to pair the MEAC and the SWAC champions together.
It has never happened. Since we've had the first four, they have both gone to the first four, but never in the same matchup against each other.
Right, and there's nothing written that I know of that states that they prevent that, but they do prevent that. And the two HBCU leagues, they just don't like to put them together.
I will be shocked if I ever see them playing each other in the first four. I think it's more of a decision, an off the books decision by the committee to say to do this. But as the committee members turn over in the years, maybe it will eventually happen. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
I'll take it a step further here. Since they went to the new first four format in 2011, neither the MAC nor the SWAC have both sent teams to the first four in Dayton at the same time, even in opposite games.
And there's a chance if we have a few upsets in conference tournaments and Hampton pulls the double in the MEAC, maybe they get one of those 16 seeds that avoids it. Maybe the same thing in the SWAC if Texas Southern pulls the double, but we'll see what happens. But let's move to the top of the conferences. I don't have any calls back yet.
Is your phone on?
Maybe he's watching watching one of the games right now.
That's what it is. He's watching.
Louisville Pitt is coming to an end right now. Maybe he's watching the end of it. As soon as the game's over, Mark, give us a call. America East, let's start at the top here. Stony Brook did lose the game at Albany, but is 14-1, and they have clinched the top seed and home court advantage throughout the conference tournament.
Yeah, pulling up Stony Brook's profile here, give me a second. And looking at it, and again, on WarrenNolan.com, undefeated at home, both in and out of conference play, home court advantage. Their only loss of the season was at Albany. Albany also undefeated at home, so that really doesn't hurt them. Their paper, Chad and John, nowhere near what it needs to be to get to the bubble. Their team, on the other hand, I like this team a lot. If they're on the 13 line, I won't go. I mean, if they get the right matchup, they can get out of the round of 64. I really like this Albany team. Seen them play several times.
Stony Brook.
I like them so much that I just confused them with Albany.
But well, the problem that they've had, this has been a historic problem the last few years. Even at home in the championship game, they have not been able to get over that hurdle. They've never made the tournament yet. And you wonder if they get that home game against Albany in the America East title game, do they choke it away again? And that's what you worry about with this Stony Brook.
And when you say choke it away, they have lost that game at home at least twice in spectacular fashion.
But the flip side of the coin here is, can a team like Vermont or New Hampshire upset Albany beforehand?
And I think that Stony Brook needs to almost be hoping for that I don't think they want to see Albany in the championship game.
Right.
And Albany is locked into the 2 seed, so it would be New Hampshire, Vermont are currently battling for the 3 seed.
Because there is a pretty big divide in this conference between the top 4 and the bottom 5 teams.
If
you take UMass Lowell out, who's not eligible for the conference tournament, the divide gets even bigger between Vermont and Hartford.
Yeah, I don't expect any quarterfinal upsets. I think the conference tournament gets really interesting at the semifinal level. Mm-hmm.
But good news is that we can't give someone like David Griggs a team like the Maine Black Bears again when that time comes for losing your screwed team.
Yeah. We'll are we doing that tonight? Assigning teams, or are we waiting?
I think we'll do that next week. Let's go over to the Atlantic Sun, though. We've got some pretty interesting things going on here in the A Sun. As we sit here right now, Wednesday evening, tomorrow night, Thursday evening, is the regular season finale for all 8 teams in the Atlantic Sun. We will actually have our first conference tournament bracket announced sometime late tomorrow night in this conference with North Florida is playing Jacksonville tomorrow night. If they win that game, they are the 1 seed.
Yeah.
If they lose that game, they are probably the 1 seed also. There's one scenario, though, and that is if it ends up being a 3-way tie between Jacksonville, North Florida, and Florida Gulf Coast. Those teams win, and JIT has to lose. 3-way tie, North Florida, Gulf Coast, and Jacksonville after the games tomorrow. Jacksonville gets the 1 seed. On the flip side of that, if Jacksonville loses, there's a real good chance they could drop all the way down to the 5, especially if Lipscomb gets the win, and they have to go on the road. So huge game tomorrow for the Dolphins. They can go anywhere from 1 to 5.
And that's the way it should be. You love these storylines that come with conferences that do it right and play the tournaments at campus sites. North Florida has been alarmingly bad. I realize that they're still looking at first place, but this is a team that it wasn't even subtle. It was just 1 week they looked really good, and then the next week the doors fell off. They were running away with this conference. And really at no point, even from November, did anyone in this league look to be as good as they were yet. Here they are, potentially not even ending up with as the one. And the way they're playing, I'm almost expecting them to not win this.
I believe all four games are going to be taking place tomorrow night, so it's going to have a World Cup feel to it where no team is going to have any advantage over the other.
Yeah, all games are almost simultaneously. The Kennesaw-Lipscomb game, which is probably the least important of the games anyhow, has a 7:30 start. Everything else starts at 7. But it will be an exciting night tomorrow night in the A-Sun. I'd recommend that ESPN3 quad screen for everybody.
Oh, yes.
The A-Sun tomorrow night.
If we can get a quad screen again.
Yeah, we can. Let's go over to the Big Sky, though, where good news and bad news for the Weber State Wildcats. We're sitting here, we've been talking about the fact that they and Montana have been tied for first place all season long. They have not played yet. Finally, that game we've been looking for is coming up Saturday night, Montana at Weber State. The good news, they're going to get that game at home. The bad news, their top player, Joel Ballenboy, potential NBA prospect, out indefinitely with a knee injury after earlier this week.
Yeah,
unfortunate news.
Yeah, and I think it's a difference maker. I mean, I think that What is his – okay, you just said this week, like, is he's – what is his status as far as the conference tournament goes?
As of today, the update is out indefinitely.
Okay.
They don't know if he – the good news – I guess one more piece of good news for Weber State is if they can get him back in time for the conference tournament, I think they've got a real good shot at winning it. And even if they lose the game this weekend to Montana, finishing second place – it's not going to really matter much
right.
with the change of the Big Sky tournament format.
Yeah, and again, I don't like that they changed the format, but in this case, for Weber, the game's almost inconsequential either way. Like, neither team is near the bubble. Winning the automatic bid is their only way in, and regardless of what happens this weekend, it's still a big game. If for no other reason than a first-place finish at least gets you into a postseason tournament, although not the big tournament. But really, their only way in, regardless of what happens this weekend for either team or any team in this league, is to win the automatic bid.
Right. And if Weber can get him back, I'm going to like their chances in the Big Sky tournament. If they can't, I expect Montana to win this weekend, even though they're on the road, and I expect Montana to be the automatic bid recipient
right.
at that
yes.
point. Big South standings, John. We now have Winthrop in sole possession of first place at 12-4 here, and but one game up over High Point in Nashville, two over Coastal Carolina. Still a crazy conference going on.
Still a crazy conference, and sadly, it's still going to be played in the cozy confines of Buies Creek. So it's not going to be campus sites. It's not even going to be Myrtle Beach. But I do like the Fighting Kelsey's chances to come out of the Big South for the first time in a few years.
Yeah, Pat Kelsey's done a really good job with this team. You don't really hear his name much mentioned when jobs come open, but he's done really well with this Winthrop team.
Yeah, and I mean, Winthrop has spawned a coach in the past that's had into pretty good success. So
Yeah, they have, in Greg Marshall.
Yeah.
But then again, if you're going with star power, you can't get past High Point. And who is it, John Brown?
Yeah. John Brown is an absolutely amazing player. High Point has never made the NCAA tournament. He's a senior. This is his last chance to make it. Just for his sake, I would love to see them win this conference tournament. But
yeah.
I've absolutely, Asheville, Winthrop have had pretty good seasons, and even Coastal Carolina there.
Right. Liberty's still on a tear.
They've fallen down
yeah.
a little bit now.
Yeah,
Liberty,
did.
Actually, after we made such a big deal about how red hot they had been, I believe they lost back-to-back games since
yes.
then they did.
Right.
Both of them at home to Radford and Presbyterian. So after that great run they made, we suddenly were talking about them. We may have put a little bit of hex on them, actually. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think at this point, Liberty is going to be fighting just to avoid the sixth place, at which will have to require you to play a first-round game. You want to finish in the top five in this conference to avoid that.
Right.
Over in the Big West.
Hey, Jim, just real quick, can you check your messages, please? I mean...
Oh, let me...
I just don't understand why he hasn't called back.
Hold on, I'm going to check here. No, they have not called back yet. We may have to call again before the show ends.
Okay, yeah.
All right. Maybe I got sent to the wrong voicemail, whoever that Lisa person was.
So.
Okay. Over in the Big West, Hawaii got the huge win at Irvine, swept the Anteaters now, two games up in the conference. David, how good is this Hawaii team?
I like them a lot. We're about to get their profile up here. It's all relative how good is your good, but in relative to an at-large bid, they do have some serious holes here. Their RPI is a little bit lower than what you're normally seeing for teams inside the bubble. Yeah, and another thing that's going to work against them is their out-of-conference schedule. I mean, it was pretty much non-existent. And they
non-conference strength of schedule 273, overall strength of schedule 268. These are not NCAA tournament numbers.
Right. I mean, you rarely see it, but at the end of the day, after seeing them play a lot this year, including the game at Texas Tech, that which they lost, they were right in there. They played Oklahoma down to the wire, and I realize that if all you have is good losses, you've got nothing. But they've gone through the Big West, they've gone on the road, and they've won the games, and they won pretty decisively against Irvine and Hawaii, and then they went to Irvine and beat them. At the end of the day, especially with the way the bubble's going and a lot of the teams on it, I think this team is good. I think this team is good enough to beat a lot of the teams on the bubble and would if they played them under equal terms. I don't think the real committee will take them just because of the categorical reasons, the weak strength of schedule, the low RPI. That's just not something that you see many teams get in with, but I like this team a lot, and I would like to think they'd at least get a serious look from the committee. And watching them play, which I know that both of you have several times, this is a good team. It's better than what their paper indicates.
Well, in
some
order
respects,
to get... Sorry, go ahead, John.
I was going to say, in some respects, this conference is the West Coast twin of the America East. The top four teams in this conference are very respectable besides Hawaii. We also have Irvine, Long Beach, and Santa Barbara. There is another huge divide between the top four and the bottom five that are going to be playing in the Big West tournament when you consider UC Davis, Riverside, Cal Poly, and Cal State Fullerton. The power numbers drop from the top four teams, which are all above 100. Suddenly you get down into sub-260 RPIs.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other point, though, with this Hawaii team, they obviously have four regular season games to go before the Big West tournament. If we're going to even consider an at-large bid, they've got to win all four of them. And just a quick note here, they've got two home games this week. If they win both these games, they will actually have set a school record for home victories in a season this year. So on the one hand, congrats to them. On the other hand, if you're setting a school record for home wins, you may have played a few too many home games.
That's true.
It'll be 18 home wins if they get the.
Yeah, and what a story they've been the last couple years. They had the issues with the coaching change last year just prior to the season. Had a really, really good season last year with an interim coach. Got to the conference championship game, didn't win it. Then the turmoil this year where they learned that they're going on probation, but they're delaying it until next year, which is the right thing to do, at least the right thing by the players. So a lot of stakes here. I mean, it's kind of a curtain call because they're going to – we won't be talking about them at all next year, really.
No, we won't. Very briefly if at all.
Yeah.
Over in the Colonial, UNC Wilmington – still with a one-game lead in this conference over Hofstra at this point. But we just when we thought Wilmington was red-hot and going to start running away with everything, they go and they lose the game last week at Bill and Mary. That may be it, in my opinion at least, for an at-large bid shot from this conference. And I think it was a shaky call to begin with anyhow.
Yeah, I mean, they would have needed to win out. They've got two more games, both home games. I expect that they'll win both of them. I think they'll get a look, but in as weak as the bubble is this year, you really just don't know. But again, some categorical problems here. A horrible strength of schedule and out of conference. And it's been my understanding that that is going to be a huge, huge point of emphasis this year. It's always a point of emphasis, but I think this committee is particularly going to favor it a lot. So probably not. I mean, we still have them italicized on our survival board, but I don't think that they get in without the automatic bid. This is going to be a really exciting tournament.
John, you're the fan of the. I was going to say you're the fan of the differential and the power numbers here. We got one in this conference: the top eight versus the bottom two. Going to be a heck of a conference tournament, though, John.
And yet, it was one of those bottom two teams in Drexel that handed a strange, strange loss to William and Mary.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, that was right before Wilmington and William and Mary hooked up over the past weekend.
Yeah, it was.
That was Drexel broke a bad losing streak with that win, as they're trying to fight to get that 9 seed instead of the 10 seed, going up against Delaware head-to-head tomorrow night in that 9th versus 10 seed battle in the Colonial. But let's go to Conference USA, where we had a top two teams battling this past weekend as UAB went to Middle Tennessee and looked pretty good getting the win, David.
They really did. One of the better games they've played all year. Another big game at home tomorrow against Marshall, kind of a showcase game for them.
Marshall's now the second-place team.
Yeah, Marshall's the second-place team. Marshall's done really well in conference play. Again, conference tournament in Birmingham, a predetermined site, but it's hard to get too upset about it if it ends up being in the city of the team that finishes first. Again, UAB, people getting kind of excited about this team. They were in the NCAA tournament last year. They've been playing pretty well this year. Their fan base and their school has had kind of some issues over the past year and a half with the football program and the success of the basketball program last year. So there is some excitement about it. You hear a lot. One of the storylines is that they don't feel that they're getting really the national respect that they deserve being 21-5. But one of the problems is, you know, with a one-bid league here, they think that Conference USA kind of holds them back. Well, Conference USA actually propped them up. Their out-of-conference schedule is 304. So, but again,
the same conference that held Memphis back for several years.
Yeah.
The problem is that, but I mean, there is a problem with the bottom of this conference, though. I'll just try to get up these team lists here. When you've got a conference with the likes of Rice, Florida International, Florida Atlantic, Texas, San Antonio, it does drag the league down. And I think we're going to have an interesting conference tournament for the first couple of rounds. But once UAB and Middle Tennessee start playing, I expect those two teams to just roll over the rest of them.
Right, and UAB really, really good at home this year. No home losses. It's not in their home arena, but it is in their home city.
John, over in the Horizon League, Valpo, any shot they get back into the at-large bid talk, considering that they would need another bad loss in the conference tournament to need an at-large bid?
Well, one of the advantages of the ladder format that they have is they're going to avoid playing an atrociously bad team out of the Horizon unless they were to
Everybody's atrociously bad out of the Horizon other than Valpo.
Well, they didn't keep the ladder, did they?
More atrocious than others.
Did they keep the ladder?
Yes, they did.
Okay, at least they did that.
But I think the way it's shaping up right now, they would probably be facing Green Bay in the semifinals if Chalk holds up, and then probably get Oakland in the championship game, because I'm just going to assume right now that Wright State is not going to get what amounts to a road win in the semifinals, assuming they make it that far.
Well, David, should they be scared if it is a Oakland-Wright State semifinal on the other side and Wright State wins it? I think they should be terrified, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I don't understand. They've blown pretty much through everyone except Wright State. Wright State just kind of has their number. Wright State's done okay in conference. They're 15-12, and they've beaten Valpo twice, but I don't know what their issue is with beating. I mean, Wright State has essentially killed Valpo. Had it not been for those two losses, they'd be safely inside the bubble.
I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more there.
And that's not even counting a possible Wright State Detroit quarterfinal that would precede Wright State in Oakland.
Right.
Last Friday night, we had in the Ivy League the game that was going to determine whether Yale ran away with the conference or whether it was game on for the last 2 weeks here. And it's game on.
It is.
Princeton, a very, very impressive home win over Yale. These two teams are now tied in the loss column, although Princeton given that they don't play their second game against Penn until the end of the season, is one less win. Columbia's still in things here at 8-2, and actually, with the Lions hosting both Yale, I'm sorry, at Princeton and hosting Yale in these last 2 weeks, are actually control their own destiny as well. Do we have a shot at the three-way tie, or do you think that Columbia is going to get beaten this week at Princeton, maybe next week in Yale, and that's the end of them?
Probably the latter. As much fun as a three-way tie would be, I think we're looking at the latter. But I don't. Yale and Princeton are both really good. I was actually impressed with Princeton in that game where they beat Yale.
Yeah. There is an argument being made by some Princeton fans on Twitter. I've been following it a little bit here. You've got an RPI right now for Princeton of 37. That is and the type of RPI that a team that finishes in first place in its conference gets the at-large bid consideration for. If Princeton wins out and Yale wins out, they'll finish tied for first place. Princeton will have an RPI in the top 40. And if they lose to Yale in a one-game playoff, they'll still be in the 40s somewhere probably. Yale is a solid RPI team. It's kind of that categorical, okay, you weren't an outright first-place finisher, but you tied for first, and you lost in your quote-unquote conference tournament. Is there any way that Princeton gets an at-large bid, in your opinion?
Well,
the top three wins are going to be, was it Yale, Bucknell, and Hampton?
Exactly.
I could, looking at it here, and we got it up on the screen.
They have strength of schedule numbers way better than Hawaii that we were talking about. 78 conference strength of schedule. Overall, 126.
I know their paper is better than Hawaii. It is. And I just don't think their team is as good as Hawaii's. But I realize paper is 90% of it. That's how people – you could not watch a basketball game all year, just look at a team's paper and probably do as well as any bracketologist when picking the field. It's possible. Selfishly, I'd much rather see a team like Princeton in there than a lot of other teams that are on the bubble and are just crashing into the mountain like your Florida State and some other teams, because I think Princeton is good. But one of the problems is that there's just no meat here. I mean, there's just nothing in the way of a good win. Like, if they go – I mean, had they gone to Yale and won, you're talking about winning a game at a place against a team that rarely loses at home. I think their best win, would you agree, is probably that win on the road at Columbia?
Yeah, I could agree with that.
Yeah. It's hard to make a case that a team belongs if all you have is a solid RPI, because you have to have something else you can point to in the way of a quality win. And even if it's not against another tournament team, like, say they had gone on the road and won games against teams that weren't tournament teams but were solid at home, at least you can argue for that. I want Princeton – I'll put it this way. I would like to see Princeton in the field in that circumstance, but as someone that wants to see them in the field, I'm having a hard time coming up with an argument for them.
On the other hand, if you look at the top three wins that Yale has this year, it's probably going to be Princeton – at Penn and NJIT.
Well, I'm not going to make the Yale case that if Princeton wins that game, Yale can get in. Yale is in the 50s in the RPI. I don't think that's that categorical top 50. And with the loss of Princeton in a playoff game, I don't think they crack the top 50. It was just that Princeton kind of could fall into that categorical top 50.
Yeah.
Let's go over to the Metro Atlantic. And John, you and I are going Sunday afternoon, 5 o'clock, senior day at Monmouth. They are going to be hosting Niagara after they host Ryder in their rematch of a game they almost lost, they should have lost, on Friday night. And the question we've been asking all season, we're going to keep throwing it out there, if Monmouth wins these two games here and loses in the conference tournament somewhere along the line, either to Siena or even to Iona there, with all that good at the top of the profile and all the bad on the bottom of the profile, and I don't think a loss to Siena or Iona in the conference tournament would be devastatingly bad. I think anybody else it would be. Can they still get in?
It would still be a lot better if they lost to Siena in what amounts to a road game.
Yeah, when you look at RPIs, Yes, yen is a 99, Ion is a 119 right now. They're closing in on each other, and if Iona beats Monmouth, Iona is probably going to become a top 100 loss. Top 100.
Now, here's the other thing we have to watch in the Metro Atlantic. Iona is still only a game back of Monmouth if you go by the overall standing, so the Hawks still have some work to do just to wrap up the regular season title and, at worst, an NIT bid that would come with it if they should fail.
If they lose one of those last two games, especially at home, I think that that's not the straw breaking the camel's back. That's the anvil breaking the camel's back. Those are bad basketball teams. Right.
And if they lose their quarterfinal in the Metro Atlantic, same thing. When you've the quarterfinal in the Metro Atlantic, if you're in there as the one seed, you lose to a Ryder or a Canisius or a Quinnipiac, same thing. But once you get to the semifinals or even the championship, it could be a different story.
And you kind of have to ask a little bit here, what has happened to Monmouth? Even the games they've won, they went to Ryder and just played awful. They ended up winning the game. You hear the term good loss all the time thrown around. If there's any such thing as a bad win, that was it. Again, the one thing that we harped on, I think, last week and the week before, and I'll do it again after this past game against Iona, and again against St. Peter's the other night, what is it with this team's shot selection all of a sudden? Like, what is it that they've stopped making the extra pass, and they just take – I don't think there's another team that takes more bad shots in a given game than Monmouth all of a sudden.
It can't possibly be a bad win like Dayton had against St. Louis last night or what San Diego State might do to Wyoming tonight.
Yeah.
You want to talk about games that are hard to watch.
The other news with Monmouth is Deion Jones out with an injury. He's also another guy who's out indefinitely with a hand injury. If they don't get him back, they are a deep team. I think they can win without him.
I hope they can't win without Ryder and Niagara at home.
Yeah. But even then, I think they could win the conference tournament even without Deion Jones, but just because of the depth they have. But, I mean, that is a bad loss when you lose one of your star players like that.
Yeah.
Over in the Mid-American, John, this is all you. You've got the Mother Miami notes up there. So why don't you take it away, tell us what's going on in the MAC there while I try to check it on Mark Emmert again.
Yeah, this was another one of the specials that was on American Sports Network that also debuted on one of the Cincinnati sub-TV stations. But Miami had a halftime lead, although this is something they've done on a somewhat frequent basis during the year. But this is one of the first times where they've been able to hang on to a second-half lead. And this was another loss that Akron just could not afford to take, because I think their five losses, they're tied with Wagner for the worst record among auto bid conference leaders at this point. Akron is 10-5 versus Wagner's 11-5.
Yeah, this all happened right after we praised Akron on the show. I really like this Akron team, but God, have the wheels fallen off lately. Chad, any word?
Apparently, we got into the voicemail again, so I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
We will keep trying to follow up on this, though. We still got the MEAC at the top of the show, so let's move on to the Missouri Valley Conference. Finally reaching a team that I think we all agree should definitely be in if they win out, even if they lose in the conference tournament, and that's this Wichita State team, although a few people in the media don't agree with that Wichita State is a clear tournament team at this point.
I mean, normally not, but have you seen the rest of the bubble? I mean,
exactly.
One of the things about it is that it is a 68 team tournament. I mean, you've got to take 68.
You got to take, and when, being a first place finisher, and I think, you know, no offense to Jerry Palm, who was on the show with us last week, but I've seen the NCAA tournament give a lot of credit to being an outright first-place finisher in your conference, the NCAA selection committee doing that.
Yeah.
More so than – and it's kind of like an extra item on your resume that's not there when you just look at who you played and who you beat. And I think that that's one factor that's really going to help the Shockers get that bid if they need it.
Yeah, and I mean, they don't have any horrendous losses, maybe one. I think they look like a team. I think their paper is the paper of a tournament team.
It was awful to lose at Tulsa. You're right.
Yeah. Other That's than fine. Losing in Tulsa. They're winning right now on the road at Loyola. They should. If they win that last game against Illinois State, which is one of the teams that beat them earlier, I think they're in. I think they've done enough.
I think they've got to get through the quarterfinals again.
You do? Okay.
Loyola is a team they possibly could be facing in the quarters again. If not the Ramblers, then it's either going to be Indiana State or Missouri State, depending on how things shake up right now.
Right, but when you look at getting to the semifinal round, it could be an Illinois State, a Northern Iowa, Southern Illinois. I could see them losing that game and still getting in. Yeah, obviously, losing the finals to an Evansville, same thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're going to have more of a sense of urgency than they did last year, so I still think Wichita State is going to breeze through the conference tournament.
I think so, too, but in the event that they don't, I still think they're in.
Northeast Conference, Wagner is now open to a one-game lead over Mount St. Mary's and Sacred Heart as things are starting to take a little bit of shape with two games left. By Saturday, we will have the conference tournament bracket here in the Northeast. Looks like Wagner's on pace, though, to get that home court advantage throughout the conference tournament.
Yeah.
Their last two games actually are both home games, SFPA and Robert Morris. I think they win both those games, and I think they take it.
Yeah, I think
so. But even mathematically speaking, I think Robert Morris could still get a first-round game at home.
Yeah, they could. There is still a logjam here of just a couple games separating fourth place and eighth place. Bryant and Central Connecticut have been eliminated. They are off of our survival board.
Yeah.
And in the case of Central Connecticut, onto the Centenary board.
Right. Which will get them on the board, potentially.
Ohio Valley Conference, Belmont has opened up a one-game lead, one-and-a-half-game lead overall, one-game lead in the loss column over Tennessee State and Tennessee Tech, although they were sweating things out last week when we were here. Still, they actually have a game against Tennessee State coming up this weekend, which could end up deciding the division here.
Yeah, the division and the double bye. So, really big game there.
And I don't know the tiebreakers because Belmont did beat Tennessee State the first time around.
Right.
And, they've already split Tennessee Tech.
Yeah, it could be a three-way tie, so we'll have to see what the tiebreakers go out there. Obviously, if Belmont beats Tennessee State this weekend, they will get that number one seed.
Yeah.
Over in the – let me just quickly, as far as the 2-seed, we also have a battle there in the West Division, Tennessee Martin and Murray State tied at 9-5.
Yeah, how about Tennessee Martin this year? Traditionally, you know, hovering around the 300s of the RPI and the power ratings, having a very good year this year.
Yes. Patriot League, Bucknell somehow pulled out a double overtime win at Lafayette, the worst team in the conference tonight, to remain in first place. And I think that's what we're going to see in the conference tournament is exactly this. I wouldn't be surprised if the eighth seed wins at all.
Yeah, and I got to admit, I was following the score. I wasn't really watching it. I was watching a lot of the A-10 and, you know, of course, Xavier Villanova. So I really didn't see but maybe 20 or 30 seconds of that game. But the whole time, you're just waiting for Bucknell to pull away like they should, and I guess they finally did.
Well, not to double overtime.
Right, yeah.
So Bucknell's still in first place. Looks like they have not quite mathematically locked up the top seed, but they probably should be the top seed in the conference tournament.
Yeah.
But they still have a game remaining at Navy to lock up the top seed.
Again, I don't know.
Their insignia, let's see if we can, I don't know if we can get it here or not. Anyway, it's an N with a little star. And every day I'm going through all the games, and I think it's an asterisk. I just thought I'd point that out.
Anyway. Okay. All right, that's your fun fact for the day. John, yeah. The Southern Conference, Chattanooga, what did they do? You want to tell us? Because I can't even mention it.
I don't know if I can mention it either, to be honest with you. But, I mean, we thought that the Western Carolina game was an aberration a couple weeks ago. But then they doubled down by losing at home to Greensboro.
RPI 242, UNC Greensboro. RPI 242 after winning at Chattanooga, UNC Greensboro.
Well, they won by 15. And it is only their third road win of the year.
Yeah, at this point, I think Chattanooga is pretty much done in terms of an at-large possibility. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. This is kind of disappointing because last week we talked about how it's just really unfortunate that once a team like Chattanooga gets in the conference play, their profile really can't get any better because the teams that they're playing just doesn't allow it. So it pretty much either stays the same or gets worse. And when you have to avoid stubbing your toes 14, 15, 16, 18 times virtually every conference game, that's hard to do. But when you do it twice and you do it to the kinds of teams they did it to, Western Carolina and UNC Greensboro, as much as I like their program, as much as I like the season that they're having, it pains me to say it, I don't think they deserve it without the automatic bid at this point, despite some of what they did out of conference.
But you look at the rest of this conference, how bad it is, how bad the power rating numbers are, even if they lose in the conference tournament final to East Tennessee State or to Furman or to Wofford, it's going to be a very bad loss, and they can't sustain that anymore. And that's why I agree. They only are going to get in if they win the conference tournament, and they don't deserve to be in if they lose another bad game.
Right. Which
even if it's going to be your third game in 3 days, I don't care. It's a bad loss.
Right.
John, Stephen F. Austin, the only team remaining in the country that's undefeated within its conference, has broken into the top 100 in the RPI barely this week. The big question with the Lumberjacks, the first question before we get to the conference tournament is, can they win these last four games and go the perfect 18-0, three of them being on the road?
I'll take it a step further. Does it seem like they've even lost a conference game the last 3 years? And yes, I know Corpus Christi beat them last year, but they seem to own the deed on not just Corpus Christi, but also Sam Houston State, Houston Baptist, and anyone else you want to name out of the Southland.
Now, I mean, the two of the remaining games are at Incarnate Word, who is ineligible, although we need a hashtag UIW waiver going for them.
Yeah.
That is a good enough team that they could potentially surprise, and at Sam Houston, last game of the season, that's their number one rival, so I don't think that 18-0 is locked in yet. David, where do the Lumberjacks end up if they do go 20-0, win the conference tournament also, which is the latter
four? Well, here's the thing, and again, getting it up on the screen here, just a second. Yeah, like, when you look at their wins, you know, 17 of them were against either Div 2 teams or sub 200 teams. 14 line, 15 line. I think the committee values them a little bit more than they should because of their name recognition a little bit. I think they're a 15.
And I think that you do get credit if you go 20-0 against your conference.
Yeah. I think they're the best team in the Southland by far. I don't think they're better than most of the other teams that we talk about as being at the top of their leagues, even though they have this bloated record. They beat up on sub 200 teams.
Over in the SWAC, Texas Southern, three-game lead here with four games to go, almost locked up the regular season title, probably will. Something we expected to happen, despite the fact they went, I think, 1-11 in non-conference play. But rolling through the conference again. Still can't understand that loss they had to Prairie View, but I think it was just one of those games. I don't know.
Right. I think when you have all 10 teams that are in the bottom 150 of the RPI, does it really make much of a difference?
150, bottom 200. I don't. There's nobody outside the top inside the top 200.
Yeah, there's nobody in the top 200. Oh, wow. And we you know what? It's still a better year than what we're used to seeing out of the SWAC. So
the biggest sign there is there really is not anybody here in serious contention for our centenary award. I know Lee Delvecchio may want to make a case for Grambling. I'm not going to support it. I think Grambling has had their best season they've had in years. I can't see giving them another centenary award after what they've done this year.
They're 3-22, and they have a lot of sub 300 losses.
Over in the Summit League, South Dakota State no longer in first place. That honor goes to the Fort Wayne Mastodons. congratulations to them. They are just a couple games away from, I believe, two games away from wrapping up the conference regular season title, both of them on the road at Western Illinois, which they should win, at IUPUI, which is a rivalry game, so might be the bigger challenge.
Yeah. IPFW having a really good year. A recent transitional program, at least within the last 10 or 15 years. This would be exciting for them. They've never been to the NCAA tournament. It's not going to be easy. They got to go to the Dakotas to do it. South Dakota State, probably still one of the most talented teams. One of the bigger disappointments, North Dakota State, what has happened to them? You know, this is a team that returned everybody from a team that won the league last year, and they've just been disappointing this year.
And just you mentioned that they have to go to the Dakotas. Fort Wayne, as the one seed, could be matching up with an eight seed South Dakota in the quarterfinals, at being at a home court disadvantage there even. John, over in the Sun Belt, Little Rock, still sitting here at 24-3, and we go through it every week. They do have the two bad losses now at Louisiana Monroe, at Arkansas State. Four regular season games left, three of which are at home, including a huge game against Texas Arlington tomorrow night. Can they get there? If they, let's say they win out, they finish, win these last four regular season games, they win that semifinal, they lose that championship game.
Again, they're going to have the same position that Valpo does as long as they get the top seed. They'll at least be protected by the ladder that would give them a bye into the semifinals. But the way things stand right now, you're probably going to be facing a dangerous Texas Arlington team in there right now. And they still have one more matchup coming up with the Mavericks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, tomorrow night.
Comparing them to Princeton, they have the win at San Diego. I just think that they've done more here. They have the wins at San Diego State. They have the win at Tulsa. I that alone is more than anything Princeton's done. If you're going to compare the two, their RPI also in the 30s. My answer is yes. We talked about how hard that road swing was going to be, where they played four true road games and they won three of them. The only one they lost was at Monroe, one at Louisiana Lafayette, one at Georgia State, which aren't tournament teams, but those aren't the easiest places to go and win. I like this profile a lot more than Hawaii's. Now, I like Hawaii's team more than Little Rock, but I like this profile. If they win the next four, especially with as weak as the bubble is, I say put them in.
I'd argue, first of all, it's got to be the next five. You've got to win that semifinal also. And second of all, you're looking at the strength of schedule here, 262, non-conference 261. Their non-conference schedule was at Tulsa, at San Diego State, which they won, at Texas Tech, which they lost, and nobody.
Wait a minute.
Idaho, DePaul.
Chad, they played the team that the Golden Toilet Seat is named after. That's not nobody.
Yes, they played Centenary. Thank you.
In the meantime, if you want to talk about how quickly fortunes can change in the Sun Belt, look at Georgia State, who went from the Sun Belt title last year to eighth place right now, which barely gets them into the conference tournament. They're still two games ahead of Texas State in the win column, but they've also played two extra games than Texas State has at this point. And they're coming off a close loss to their in-state rival Georgia Southern last night.
Yep.
Yeah, Georgia State could be the eighth seed in this eight-team conference tournament, or not even make it at all.
There's teams that come thundering down the stretch, and then there's teams that crash into the mountain. Georgia State is they've lost eight of their last 10. Is that right? I mean, good God, talk about the wheels coming off.
Over in the West Coast Conference, St. Mary's gets the win that we discussed last week that you, David, you said you'd be willing to talk about them if they won at Gonzaga. They won at Gonzaga. Are you willing to talk about them?
I guess.
At this point, they do have five top 100 wins, one of them on the road. Two wins over the sweep over Gonzaga, who at least is arguably on board. Only two bad losses, and they're 125 losses to Pepperdine.
Yeah.
They've got to win these last three, Santa Clara at San Francisco and home against the Lopes.
Lopes, Warren hasn't added that game in yet, but
yeah.
Well, they're not going to beat the Lopes. I think that they're here's my thing on St. Mary's. Their paper is relatively solid, and I know that the committee favors that heavily. It's better than Hawaii's. I think Hawaii's team is better than St. Mary's. I think if the two played on equal terms, Hawaii would win. I think if the two played at St. Mary's, Hawaii would win.
The St. Mary's team I saw play at Gonzaga this weekend, I cannot agree with you there. I think St. Mary's would win that game.
Well, okay, I understand that, Chad. They played good against Gonzaga, but that was 1/30 of their season.
Two-thirds of their season.
Okay, they didn't play well at Portland. They didn't play at home against Loyola. They lost to Pepperdine. They sweated out Pacific. And part of me is, yeah, they're winning these games, but they're barely beating bad teams.
They beat UC Irvine. They beat BYU. They beat Stanford. I just think at this point it's going to be a very interesting case if St. Mary's wins these last three regular season games, loses to Gonzaga in the West Coast Finals. It's going to be a very interesting case.
Why didn't Gonzaga beat them?
I'm going to miss Gonzaga in the tournament this year.
Let's go over to the WAC very briefly. As Mark Emmert still has not gotten back to me, Mark.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on here. Going to check here again, but if Mark does not come through for us, New Mexico State, and that's it, David, or is there any case?
New Mexico State, to their credit, I know that they've been hilarious on Twitter because they don't like all the love that we're getting the Lopes or some of them. They've actually looked really good in conference play. They haven't looked so good at any other point, but relative to the rest of the conference, they've been great. They only have one loss since mid-January, and it was at Wichita State.
By 30 points.
Maybe we should count that as more than one loss.
I don't know why New Mexico State is upset, because they're losing out an opportunity on getting another quality win in the WAC. Would they be able to beat a full WAC field in the conference tournament in Las Vegas in a couple weeks?
Yeah. Well, is it in Las Vegas or Reno?
It's in Vegas. It's in Vegas. I mean, New Mexico State, by the Lopes being ineligible, does get a bye into the semifinals. Only 7 teams in that field, so that's another reason they probably don't want the Lopes in. They don't want to have to play
an extra game. We have called the NCAA, but New Mexico State, they split with New Mexico, I believe, this year, and they're dancing and the Lobos are not. So happy times in Las Cruces.
I mean, they'd be playing Chicago State. I mean, isn't that the same thing as a bye?
Oh, could be.
Yes.
Let's do a quick preview of some of the upcoming games, then we'll get to our top 10 list. I know we're just around the hour mark, so we're starting to run out of time here. But coming up tomorrow night, we already mentioned those huge games in the Atlantic Sun, including the North Florida at Jacksonville being the star game of that group.
Yeah, huge. And again, John said it best. It's like those side-by-side World Cup games. Everything's going to be happening at once.
Colonial, big game. Hofstra is at UNC Wilmington, the top two teams. They're going head-to-head.
Yeah.
UNC Wilmington looking to lock up the conference regular season title tomorrow night.
Right, with the exception of the Bill and Mary game, I love the way that Wilmington's playing. I think that they will win the conference tournament.
We mentioned Arlington is at Little Rock tomorrow night. We mentioned Marshall at UAB in Conference USA.
Good one there.
And another big one here coming up. This is actually on ESPNU tomorrow night, actually. Winthrop at High Point in a battle of two of the three teams in the first place battle in the Big South. So
yeah, and that one should be fun. And again, NCAA tournament implications really zero, because the only way in is the automatic bid. But postseason tournament, and for these under the radar conferences, it is a big deal. The winner can get to the NIT.
Huge games coming up Friday night. Also, Monmouth hosting Rider. We mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Iona's at Manhattan. That's one of the games that Iona needs to win if they want to win the conference tournament. And that's their number one rival. Walk across the street to play Manhattan.
Love that rivalry.
And the huge game in the Ivy League, 6 o'clock Friday night, Columbia at Princeton.
Yeah.
Princeton wins this game, that might be it for Columbia. Columbia wins it, we may be in for a three-way battle here.
Yeah, I suppose we can call New Rochelle and Bronx across the street from one another, can't we?
Close enough.
Yeah.
Coming up on Saturday, there's some really big games here. We mentioned that Fort Wayne at IUPUI game. Bucknell's at Navy trying to lock up the Patriot League title. We've got few others here. Stony Brook hosting Vermont. Columbia's at Penn, and if they do beat Princeton, or if they lose to Princeton, this could be a trap game for the Lions here. This Penn team has been competitive this season in the Ivy League, unlike the other four teams in the conference.
So in other words, it's Columbia's turn to go for the vaunted Penn-Princeton double.
They got to go for that Penn-Princeton double, and it's not easy to do.
Right.
Not an under-the-radar game, technically. I think it's worth mentioning very quickly, though. Gonzaga at BYU coming up on Saturday.
Yeah.
Involving under-the-radar conferences, not under-the-radar teams. Montana at Weber State, the huge one in the Big Sky, is the 9 o'clock game Saturday night, and probably the under-the-radar game of the day, despite all those other good games. That's the game we've been waiting for all season in the Big Sky.
Yeah.
Something I'll probably be flipping the stations on XM Radio to look for as I make the drive into New Jersey.
We got two big games coming. Well, we got a couple big, several big games coming up on Sunday. John and I will be at Niagara at Monmouth after we go see Xavier at Seton Hall. Little Hoops HD road trip doubleheader there. But right. Belmont at Tennessee State, a huge one to try to determine the Ohio Valley Championship.
Yeah, big one there, and big conference tournament implications as far as where they land in the bracket and on the ladder.
And even more important, we could have our Centenary Award decided Sunday afternoon, as Chicago State will be hosting Texas Rio Grande Valley. If Chicago State loses this game, I'm going to be of the firm position that Chicago State deserves the award.
This is the most
winnable game of the season.
It is, but you can't ignore all these bad losses at Grambling.
Well, at the same point, I also brought this up in the email thread. If you look at Central Connecticut's schedule, 22 out of their 26 games are outside of the RPI top 200.
I don't want to argue this too much, John, but Central Connecticut has a road win.
Yeah, that's pretty.
That is, you know, that's huge for disqualifying.
Yeah, but if you play that many bad teams, you're going to accidentally win one. I mean, Chicago
on the road.
Check out the Centenary tab. It should, well, if you're on the main page, it should be up there. It explains all about the Centenary Award.
Yeah, just real quickly here, Monday night we got Stephen F. Austin at Incarnate Word. We mentioned that. Even coming up Tuesday night, Little Rock is hosting Arkansas State in the revenge game, the game they lost earlier this year. And, of course, that huge Grand Canyon at St. Mary's game coming up next week, Tuesday night. And also Tuesday night, David, the start of conference tournaments.
Yes, and the start of – are we starting Monday or Tuesday?
Well, Monday night we'll be doing our Hoops
HD report. Oh, yes,
yes. And we will be ending the Hoops HD report with the beginning of our Championship Week video notebooks. And we will then be streaming to you live 24/7 beginning Tuesday, March 1st until this
– all the way through Selection Sunday.
Non-stop.
Non-stop.
Or maybe just for about 20 minutes every night, one or the other.
Yeah,
we'll even be streaming coverage of David Griggs on the phone with the utility companies trying to avoid disconnection.
Right, yes.
But let's end by doing our top 10 lists. I'm going to run through my teams, and you guys can comment and tell me who you would have there instead if you don't agree. I have Wichita State number one overall.
I think I agree with that. At least it's how good the teams are playing right now.
At 2 and 3, I have Monmouth 2, Little Rock 3.
I'm not as big on Monmouth, and I know that they've dropped some games, but they've started to worry me. They don't play as well as they did a month ago.
John, I need you to defend my number 4 team. I have St. Mary's number 4 overall.
I would probably make a case that Little Rock and St. Mary's could be 1 and 2 based on their entire season's body of work and not going through very many dry spells.
I mean, you can't. I mean, yeah, you got to be impressed with how St. Mary's barely beats those bad teams.
David harping on the bad wins again. Let's go to number 5. I have Hawaii, and I think David, you do agree with that.
I would have them higher. I would have Hawaii and Stony Brook and probably Little Rock and probably just about everybody else. I would have St. Mary's in my top 10. I would have them close to the bottom though.
I've Princeton at number 6. Chattanooga still in at number 7 cuz that Dayton win still is huge.
It is.
I've got Stony Brook at 8, Valpo coming back in at number 9,
yeah,
and I've got the Lopes in at number 10.
Yeah, I can see that. The Lopes, I believe Villanova, Xavier, and Grand Canyon have the most wins on the season, don't they? Am I wrong there?
I believe you are correct.
Yeah.
I did get four honorable mentions, teams that I considered but didn't quite make my field. UNC Wilmington, Akron, Yale, and Stephen F. Austin, again, just bearing a mention because of their undefeated in conference, and for that reason only. Any other thoughts on the top 10, John?
It's too bad that this is going to be the final Under the Radar show, because I would have given SFA at least not an honorary, but a spot in the top 10 just for running the table up to this point, because no matter what conference you're in, it's a very difficult thing to pull off year to year.
Well, we've never done it before, but maybe after the field is announced sometime the week of the tournament starts, we'll announce a final top 10 Under the Radar, put that on the website at least.
All right.
But on that note, let's go to any final comments. John, any final comments for the evening?
No other final comments, but definitely going to give another reminder and shout out to the road trip for Sunday, which will be capped off with Niagara Monmouth. It should be a wild environment at the Mac Center.
It's going to be fun. David, any final thoughts from you?
I can't believe this is our last show. It just seems like basketball flies by. I still remember the first one that we did.
Thank you for calling the National
Sorry, I'm calling again, David.
Okay, sir.
Mark, call us now.
Mark, call us back. Well, that was going to be my other thought, is that Mark Emmert isn't calling us back. But, you know, just because this is the end of Under the Radar, you're not getting less of us. You're actually going to be getting more of us, because you're going to see us every night starting next week.
I'm sure Grand Canyon would happily cancel their game with St. Mary's in exchange for being allowed to participate in the WAC tournament.
Yeah. Well, we're going to try and make that happen.
Well, on that note, though, we will be back tomorrow night. We're going to be doing our bracket rundown show next week, Hoops HD Report Monday night. We'll probably do a couple bracket shows the next couple weeks as well, but Championship Week Video Notebook starting Tuesday. But for myself, David Griggs, and John Salika, have a great night, everybody. We'll talk to you real soon.